Okay. So. All right, so we've got several landowners who would like to talk and address cultural resources. So if you would introduce yourselves and start up,
yeah, please. Appreciate the invitation. I'm Robert Bass with Hancock Forest Management.
Dave Burrell, Hancock Forest Management.
And I just briefly would like to present before I need to leave on the, have another appointment I have to get to, but talk briefly about the roundtable work that I've been involved in for a fair number of years, well before the Cultural Resource Protection Management Plan, voluntary plan that we developed with the different caucuses present. And in my work over those years, I really found that the collaboration to be the most successful approach, and the information sharing, the communication, the sharing of experiences, and which ultimately led to the development of the Cultural Resources Protection Management Plan that we've been working by and through since the inception. What I got out of that entire process and what I still continue to get as I continue to be involved is really an education. I, over the years, have become more and more aware of the needs, more and more aware of the tools to help manage cultural resources. I've also had a chance to develop a greater understanding of cultural resources all the way back from my education. And of course, the real world is always a little more complex than you get in a classroom. I've had a chance to work with many of the individuals in this room on different scenarios and issues. And you develop that understanding, that caring, and really knowing is caring. The more I learn, and I heard some earlier speakers put it very well, you don't necessarily need to understand it to care about it. If I care about you, I care about what you care about. And you develop relationships, and when you develop the relationships like we have on the Cultural Resources Roundtable, you can have meaningful and results-oriented discussions. We, as a company, have learned a lot from that process, and it's allowed us to continually improve how we work with tribes around cultural resources and around archaeological resources, and that really is thanks to the Cultural Roundtable team. All those combined, it translates to on-the-ground improvements. We use a number of different tools, mapping, LIDAR. We've gone to pre-submission reviews where we work with the tribes in advance of submitting our forest practices to give them a chance to look at what we're doing. Because our philosophy is, quite frankly, is we'd like to address concerns before it becomes a DNR issue. We've developed an inadvertent discovery plan, implemented it a couple different times, and we have engaged employee and contractor training. In conjunction with some of our tribal friends that have helped us actually to do the presentations and the training. All that combined, it allows us to identify and protect the resources. And just in closing, we strive to work closely with our partners and the people we care very much about. That's our tribal neighbors. We certainly wouldn't want to do anything that runs contrary to what their objectives are, and so we are always open to hear and understand and of course improve as we move forward. And with that, I will excuse myself and unless anybody has any questions, and let David Morrell give his presentation.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Board, for the invitation to come speak today. Little constraints in a seat. Usually I'm on landing, talking to kids, talking to fellow foresters, so I get excited about this kind of thing. So if you see me rocking around, please don't be disrespected. One of the biggest things I wanted to bring to the conversation is the dirt forester, the dirt biologist, the dirt resource professionals, what's going on right now in the field, especially from our perspective. One of the things to keep in mind is the schools of forestry that, you know, way back to Schenck with the turn of the century were brought about because of a need for sustainability. a need for good stewardship. So the last 100 years of science-based adaptive management is something you're going to find across the board, regardless where a student went and got their forestry or natural resource degree. So it's important to keep that in mind. One of my favorite authors studying in school is Otto Leopold. And the point on this slide here is there's not many foresters, natural resource practitioners that are in the field that don't enjoy hunting, fishing, out on the land. I've got foresters that probably spend as much time on the weekends as they do during the week, out there with their families recreating, berry picking, mushrooms, a variety of things. So they are, across the board, very important to not only us professionally, but also us outside of work. So the process for a forester in securing an approved FBA harvest, one of the biggest things is a research review. I try to tell foresters, you know, to get as many perspectives as you can. Perspectives is important, whether it's just a matter of how you're going to engineer the harvest unit. That's one part of it, but also the protection of resource. So the more things that you can bring to the table prior to going out into the field helps you see all the things across the board, especially when you're going through the timber and taking a look at what is out there. Pre-layout communication is also vitally important, something we believe strongly with. Layout itself, post-layout communication, FPA submittal, which then is reviewed, and then I'll go into educational opportunities. So maximizing perspective, back to that, you gotta be able to understand what the past conditions are, not just how the harvest unit was logged in the past, but also what are some of the negative effects that you can look to avoid based on your current understanding of being able to protect resources. Your desired future condition to meet your land management objectives. And of course, protection of resources, and at the end of the day, efficiency. The more research you do, the more you can bring to the table before you step foot out of the truck, the better product that you're gonna be able to deliver at the end of the day. One of the map databases that I could spend hours, maybe days talking about is a GLO. So we have GLO reference in GIS, and if you're not familiar with it, it's the land recorded data from around 100 years ago, maybe more depending on the area, part of the country, but they recorded everything one chain at a time. So it's good detail, it's a very good resource to have to see what it looked like then and also what you need to be aware of when it comes to archaeological and historical resources. Another thing we do is take the DAP data and overlay it over our current GIS information, make sure that we're not getting ahead and we're trying to get ahead of things proactively and make sure that we're accounting for the protection of those resources. Next is USGS. A lot of people think they're outdated, but there's quite a few places that you can find information on a USGS map that's not elsewhere, whether it's an old relic campground or maybe the original name of a road that just didn't transpire data. And then my favorite with the current technology change is LIDAR. We use LIDAR to pick up on traditional trails so they can be protected. This case here is very cool. Those lines, there's a, it's where they took a steam donkey back down the hill around the turn of the century. Without picking that up on LIDAR, I wouldn't know to look right there in that draw, which would be a normal riparian buffer, and see that that resource is there. So LIDAR is an awesome tool to utilize on all units. Part of the pre-layout communication that we do is we send out an 18-month harvest plan meeting with affected tribes. We like to sit down face-to-face, talk it over, see what our plans are. Also, yearly, we go out with state tribes, WDNR, and talk about our farm map program, past completions and future projects. And then, of course, IDTs, which we take advantage of quite a lot. They're a very important resource to get out there before the submittal, get everybody that's interested to come out to the field and talk the product, or talk the projects through. Given that a consensus by all stakeholders represents a common goal and a successful outcome. You know, layout, two is a very key part. Sometimes you got stuff and data sets in your research review that's just not there in the field, or vice versa. So it's another part of the step of understanding the importance of it. Plus layout communication. We right now do a 2 week prior FPA submission to notify affected tribes. This allows adequate time to revisit what we've already talked about, what polygons we may have met and talked about even 18 months prior, or what we may have talked about in a pre-IEDT team meeting. So this is just a recap on that final project. Educational opportunities, I think, is probably the strongest thing that we all can move forward on. Keeping current on professional literature is important for foresters, important for biologists, important for engineers. Things are cutting edge and coming down the pipe pretty fast. Formal and informal meetings. It's important communication to network, not only with our tribal colleagues, but also with state to stop in once in a while and see how things are going. Have good conversation. You know, and then two on training. It's important to have training not only to understand the resource, but to understand operations. That's key. When you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but a shovel harvester puts down less PSI than a horse. So when you're looking at soil types and you're thinking about the impacts to the soil, or maybe if there's a resource out there, by getting that understanding out there and in front of some of the resource protection specialists helps really mitigate and understand what possibly could impact the resource. And lastly, it's been talked about, but I don't think we've talked enough, is communication. And, you know, part of being a part of the Cultural Resource Roundtable is a very important part of what we do. Training. And then one thing I want to point out too is communication is a two-way street, regardless of the parties involved. So with that, any questions?
Any questions for more members for David?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. And then there's
three other
landowners coming up.
I guess I can leave that up. For the record, my name is Tom Nelson. I'm the Washington Timberlands Manager for Sierra Pacific Industries. We own about 280,000 acres in the state of Washington. About half of it is up north in Whatcom and Skagit County, where I'm from. Hi, Lisa. The other half is in the southern part of the state, predominantly Lewis County, Cowles County, etc. I just want to offer our perspective from this. We deal with, I counted them coming down this morning, 14 different tribes in the state of Washington, 12 of those on the FPAs and on our land base, and the other two because we're working to build a new mill at Shelton, and we've had two new tribes that we've been dealing with over there, quite successfully, by the way. But up north, we have 8 different tribes that we deal with up there. They're all Point Elliott tribes. From the north, Lummies, Nooksacks, Upper Skagit, Swinomish, Sauk-Sawatagh, Stillaguamish, Tulalip, and Suquamish. And we have really solid relationships with them. But the word that keeps coming back here is communication, and I think that's really where all of this has to go, because we haven't had an issue with cultural resources in our FPAs. We get one about every 2 years, and it's resolved through the current process by talking with one another. So I'm really not sure. I heard the presentations this morning. They were fascinating presentations, but it's very foreign to the history that we've had on our property. We've had policies in place for the past 10 years with all of the tribes up there, dealing with access and dealing with communication, some of the special elk hunts, that sort of thing. And that's really the key to it. I think to a person, well, first of all, we represent a lot of different type of landowners. We're a privately held company. We're not a public company. You can't buy stock. We're not a REIT. We're not a TIMO. We're not a small landowner. We're a large landowner. So there's this feeling that landowners are all this homogenous group and we all think alike. We're very different. In the same way, all 14 of those tribes that we deal with are very different. Some of them are actively involved with forest practice applications. Some are not. Most of our business with them has nothing to do with forest practices. It's other things. I'm going to the Swinomish Blessing of the Fleet tomorrow, just to, because we're part of the community as they are, and also it's good salmon. But we have more dealings in that regard, or like the mill at Shelton, where we deal with the Skokomish and the Squaxins over there on building the facility. But I guess what I wanted to say is that to a person, all of the tribes that we deal with, they would prefer to deal with us one-on-one and have communication rather than dealing with DNR through a rulemaking process that's going to hopefully protect their interests. I don't think they're ever going to divest their interest in their cultural resources to a state agency, personally. So I think the key to this is that communication. Whatever you can do to foster better communication between the landowners and the tribes, that's going to be the way to improve this process. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm going to read a little bit here. I'm speaking from my heart, but
you want to introduce yourself, Steve?
Okay. I'm nervous enough that I want to make sure I get it all down, so if you're going to hear, I'm not a polished speaker. So my name is Steve Barnemeyer, and I'm a small forest landowner in Jefferson County, as well as a practicing professional forester with over 41 years of forest management experience. I represent Washington Farm Forestry Association on the TFW Cultural Resources Roundtable. Washington Farm Forestry Association's 1,300 family members manage over 150,000 acres of forest land in Washington. And as Ken Miller mentioned earlier, our association's motto is stewards of the land for generations to come. We take that very seriously. Today, I want to re-emphasize Washington Farm Forestry Association's ongoing commitment to protection of cultural resources.